So we are becoming into the Purim section, the time of the year. So we're going to ask a question, a very relevant question, come up with a couple of answers, some potentially contradictory. And then with that, we will circle back to something that we started a couple of weeks ago that we're going to make relevant as well. We didn't finish that up yet. So we know the story, the basic story of Esther, which in this class many years ago, Stephen, we spent many years on the first five, maybe six chapters. We didn't get through the whole thing in the end. And we have like this. At one point, Esther is taken as the queen. And one of the interesting facets of the story is that even though Esther was taken as the queen, she does not reveal her original nationality. And it's a very odd thing. And the king trying to get a nationality, if you remember then, he gives a day off to the world. He trots helping taxes and making big parties, all in the hopes of figuring out what is her background. And it's a very odd thing that the queen marries the guy and doesn't say her background. And we're talking about a king who chopped the head off, maybe potentially, of his previous queen. So it's not like you want to disregard his request too often, but she does. And one of the questions is, why did Mordechai insist to Esther not to say, well, I mean, if we have someone in the White House, would we not use them for getting past building codes, to getting past a potential illegal trial, just taking funds and losing your job as the mayor of New York City, if possible? Wouldn't you use the presidential connections if you had the opportunity? So the question, of course, is, that's a random idea. I'm thinking, not anyone specific, obviously. But if you were close to the king, you'd get everything through. So why would Mordechai tell Esther? And at this point in time, Haman's like, he's nobody. So it really would work in your favor. You could put everyone on notice that, by the way, the queen is Jewish, and then the whole plot never begins. Because Haman wouldn't have been stupid enough to go after the queen. That'd be idiotic. So what was Mordechai, what we would say on the simplicity, the worst political strategy in the history of the world? There is no danger right now. Things are looking good. Just take advantage. When do Jews not take advantage? And it's not even a Jewish thing. It's everything.
I said Haman went after one queen already.
Oh, very cute. Okay, very cute. So, that was going after a queen. Okay, let's for the background of the story, what he's saying is, because Haman's name doesn't appear in the beginning. But at one point, Vashti has this party, and there's a fight at the party. Vashti not listening to the king. And then there's a debate what to do with the queen. And even though it doesn't say his name, Haman, according to the Midrashim, it is Haman, and he arranges to have Vashti murdered. So Bodenheim is correctly asking, clearly Haman has no issue of going after the queen. I was saying a second ago, let's announce that the queen is Jewish. Haman will be afraid. Bodenheim is saying, wait a second, that's not a good question. Haman doesn't seem to be afraid of the queen. He went after Vashti. On my first answer on the spot, because a good question would be simple. By Vashti, she did something bad to the king. So at that moment in time, Haman jumped in at the right moment in time and tried to make it worse for Vashti. But to go after the Jews when Esther had done nothing to the king, that would be a very risky move. That's why it wouldn't be as good. Now, just to show you, Bodenheim, that you are correct with your initial assumption, is that it says in the Megillah that after Esther was chosen as the queen, Haman was then raised in power. He moved up in the ranks. So instead of being a lowly congressman, he moved up to the senator. He moved up. And the question was, what's the connection between him moving up and that? And we said then, for those who remember, I'll be impressed, it was about 20 years ago, we said then that when Esther was chosen, Haman came to the palace and said, wait a second, I get rewards here. You know why? Because when the only reason you have Esther in the palace right now is because I put her in there because I got rid of Vashti. And this is right after Esther saved the life of Ahasuerus. When is this? Because Bigson Viseresh tried to kill the king. So the story was, Bigson Viseresh tried to kill the king. Esther found out and revealed the plot. Ahasuerus was saved. That seems like a plot by itself. And then it says Haman was raised in power. Why should Haman be raised in power? Because he's got, what is that connection? The connection was that after Esther tried to save the king, successfully save the king's life, Haman came and said, you know what? Who gets rewarded now more than me? I put her in power because I got rid of Vashti. So yes, as long as there was no problem, I think that Haman would have been afraid to go after Esther. So the question again is, we took a circle here. Why did Mordechai not take complete advantage of having a queen in the White House? Why didn't he do it? Bodenheim correctly says, wait a second. that wouldn't be detrimental to Haman. He goes after anybody. We're saying no. He doesn't go after anybody. He goes after a queen that made a big mistake. So it's possible to answer one answer. Bodenham is now thinking, I have a good idea. When Ahasuerus got angry at Vashti and banished or killed Vashti, did anyone else get killed? Was there any collateral damage fallout from that mistake? No. Vashti made the problem. Vashti got punished. But there's an issue. When a Jew does something, the whole world jumps on the Jews. So it's possible to say, and that is one of the answers given, that Mordechai told Esther, listen, Bodenheim is right. Haman's looking to get the Jews. And if you're known as a Jew, the first mistake you make, they're going to come after you and all the Jews. So therefore, keep your mouth quiet. Don't tell anyone you're a Jew. This guy's a hothead, Ahasuerus. Haman's looking to get the Jews. You can't make a mistake. You know what? Less pressure on you. Don't tell anyone you're a Jew. Less pressure. And if you mess up, you fall on your own sword. Don't do it us. Okay. So back to the same question. The question is, why did Mordechai not take advantage of the situation? This is the answer I want to discuss. First answer. First answer is, we discussed a long time ago that he realized that one of the major issues of a downfall to the Jews in exile, that coming up like nonstop, to the Jews being in exile, is when they intermarry. When the Jews are intermarried, they can't get out of the exile. That's when God says, you know what? You're no longer considered Jews. So Mordechai was afraid. If Esther becomes the queen, Esther's now second in the palace, Esther's in control. You know what's going to happen? The stature of the Jews are raised. When the stature of the Jews are raised, you know what happens? People walk around in America saying, I want to marry a good Jewish doctor. And the intermarriage rates go up. Intermarriage rates go up. It's bad for the Jews. As we have said in the class many a time, 50 years ago, the intermarriage rate wasn't bad. But not because the Jews weren't going to marry the non-Jews. I don't speak against Jews. But because the non-Jews wouldn't marry the Jews. Then at a certain point, it became everyone's all together. Everyone's all together. So now the non-Jews are willing to marry the Jews. And now the intermarriage rate skyrocketed. So it's good sometimes to have the Jews not be in a great position of power, because if they're in a great position of power, it leads to intermarriage, which is not a good thing. Now, we said, we'll get to it in a second, remind me, Costco, we're going a little fast. We said a few weeks ago in the Mesech Chochma that there were four merits on why the Jews got out of Egypt. Merit number one, they didn't change their names. Merit number two, didn't change their language. Merit number three, they didn't snitch on each other. Merit number four, they didn't intermarry. So what we're saying tonight, this is my new idea, that's they were in the exile, the Jews as well, right now, at the end of the 70 years of the exile. And even Ahasuerus held the 70 years had passed, there was going to be no redemption. Mordechai has to start planning the strategy to make sure that the Jews can get out. Because if he doesn't make sure they can get out, then they might lose those merits and they might not be able to get out. So he has to start thinking long-term political ramifications to make sure that the Jews stay non-intermarried. The Jews stay not snitching on each other. The Jews stay not changing their language potentially. And the Jews stay not changing their name. So within the story of Esther, you might find that Mordechai is setting up this system to make sure the Jews keep these four things intact. So attack number one was, how do you avoid intermarriage? Don't be so impressive. Costly.
I thought you were going to say that the reason why he didn't want Esther to publicize her religion was because then she would be the greatest example of intermarriage. You can't be against intermarriage and
Very
have
nice.
your daughter or your niece intermarried. You lose your all, your moral high ground is gone. She's intermarried.
You're saying similar, but like a sibling of what I'm saying. Instead of me
Yeah.
saying that to watch the whole,
Then everybody else would intermarry.
that's sort of what I'm saying, actually.
But she herself has done, she also is intermarried. I
Right.
mean, yeah.
So I'm saying that once
Yeah.
she would have intermarried, people would have seen, look at the good. I'm saying the non-Jews would have been excited the queen's in the house. You're saying even without that, they would see that, look, Esther intermarried, it can't be that bad. From the Jewish standpoint,
From a Jewish
I
standpoint,
was, and
yeah.
that's the difference. And you're correct.
You
And
thought
you're
from a
correct.
Jewish standpoint,
I
that
was
was different
focusing on the
too.
non-Jews. They'll marry a Jew because the Jews are big now. The Jews are successful. Charles Haskell correctly is focusing on the Jewish attitude. And by the way, to add to Haskell's correctness, we spoke about this years ago. It is in chain of thought, I might add. I don't remember where. I think it's Parshas Yisroi. I think so. And Parshas Yisroi, we're taking a detour right now, goes like this. We find out in last week's Parsha, Yisroi shows up and says, I'm coming with your daughter and children after the divorce. And Parshas Yisroi tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu got divorced from Parshas Shemois. The obvious question became, when you're reading Parshas Shemois, Moshe Rabbeinu is traveling toward Egypt with his wife, who performs the circumcision, which we spoke about. And then it just talks about Moshe right at the beginning of the time. Why in the world, when you're reading those psukim, would you ever assume that there's divorce? So we find out later, Shemois for Era, Boy Bishalti, sorry, five parshas later, that by the way, oh, you didn't read that story correctly. The reason why after the circumcision you don't see Tzipora's name is not because she's not integral to the story, because she's not around. She's actually not even there anymore. She stayed back. Very interesting.
Doesn't Aaron actually say?
And why did he stay back? Why did, because when Moshe Rabbeinu came to Egypt, he's at the border maybe, Aaron says, listen, we have enough people stuck in here. Don't bring more people in. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know, good idea. Bye-bye, go home. That is the story that we learn in Parshas Yisro, what occurred in Parshas Shemos. So the question becomes, okay, we now have, you know, we fill in the blanks in other areas, but why didn't the Torah tell us this story with Aaron when it originally occurred? Which means in Parshas Shemos 5 weeks ago, it should have said, Tzipora performed the circumcision, Moshe Rabbeinu served time to Mitzrayim, but by the way, Aaron in the Psukim say something, Moshe sent her back. Rashi explains what happened, but the Psukim doesn't say. The Psukim only says it way later on in Parshas Yisro. By the way, Yisro is showing up with the kids. Why are we getting to another story now?
Divorced. Where it never says anybody divorced.
Right. So the Yisro just says Shiluchel. Shiluchel could be, depends how you read those words. Oh, fine. Not clear. Fine. But the question we asked in chain of thought is, wait a second. Why wasn't this fact mentioned earlier? Now, Rashi mentioned it maybe earlier, but why didn't anyone else mention it? Why didn't Torah say it? So one of the answers was, like Haskell was saying, because Aaron, wait a minute, let's take a step back even further. Moshe Rabbeinu is coming into Egypt, and what does Aaron tell him? According to the simple version of Rashi, we have enough people slaves here. We don't need more slaves. Okay, but Moshe Rabbeinu came in. Okay, Moshe Rabbeinu had to go in because he's redeeming them. Was Moshe Rabbeinu a slave when he entered? No. Were women from the tribe of Levi, Moshe Rabbeinu's wife, would she have been a slave? What is Aaron's statement to Moshe Rabbeinu saying? We have enough slaves. We don't need more. Moshe Rabbeinu said, yeah, no, I got the card here. I got the badge. I can go through all red lights. My wife will not be a slave here. Don't worry about it. What was Aaron's... And by the way, it worked. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, you're right. Send them home. Why are you sending them home? They weren't going to be slaves anyway. He was not bringing more slaves into Egypt. Got the question?
I got the question, but I didn't know the premise.
Right. So the premise again was that Aaron said, we don't need more slaves. So we wrote in chain of thought, which you have, I think, let's hear somewhere. Well, an answer from somebody, brilliant answer, is like this. Aaron wasn't saying there will be more slaves because your wife and kids will be slaves. No. What Aaron was saying is, listen, we need to get out of this exile. One of the merits we had to get out of the exile, what we have spoken about Tuesday night class, was the morality clause being kept, no intermarriage. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jews for 200 years plus, because it's 209 years at this point, in Egypt, have really not changed names, languages, not snitched, and guess what? They have an intermarriage. But if you're going to walk in right now, you're going to walk in right now with what? With your wife. Who is she, by the way? Later on in Parshas Pinchas, there's a whole debate. She's a Midianite. You're going to bring in and say, guys, I'm getting you all out. Oh, yeah, who's that girl next to you? My wife. Oh, yeah, who is she? Midianite. No one's going to think that we have to stay moral, like Chasko is saying, from the Jewish perspective. They're going to say, you know what? We don't have to not intermarry. We're getting out of here because the Savior intermarried. Let me hear why you don't like it, Michael.
Because throughout all of the Torah, the men marry the women, and the women are instantly converted, and they're considered Jews.
Excellent. So now the question is, are you aware of what I said when I said about Pinchas? The story is when Pinchas, not Pinchas, the other guy, Zimri was with the non-Jewish woman.
Right.
And the Talmud says, talking to a Shasi in the hospital, the Talmud says, what was Zimri's conversation? He walked over to Moshe Rabbeinu, opened the Talmud of passage, by the way, in Sanhedrin 89, and he said, 82 maybe, and he comes in and says, Moshe Rabbeinu, can I be with this Midianite princess? And before you answer, Yosef, Moshe, about a Midianite princess, just remember who's sitting next to you. So if this is not allowed, what makes that allowed?
Another Midianite princess.
Another Midianite princess.
Yeah.
That is what Zimri said to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the whole place was frozen until Pinchas comes and takes care of the action. But yes, Chaskel, yes, Michael's point is right. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu or anyone else standing there just say, wait a second, no, she converted. Clearly, that wasn't as simple as you just made it sound, because nobody there said she converted. Now, one of the potential issues, there might not be conversion before Sinai. So whatever the issue is, we're not, that's
that was after Sinai.
but not when Moshe married.
Oh, I see. Yes.
So Moshe married before. Yes, but Moshe married before Sinai. So even though you are correct in saying, well, there's conversion automatic, it's not so clear that there's a mechanism for conversion prior to Sinai, because in the end there weren't even Jews before Sinai. So now the question is, well, I like your question. I want to be clear on what I'm saying. Your question is great. I'm just saying, look, that question could have applied here and nobody seemed to ask it. So yes, there is a concept of conversion. But Moshe Rabbeinu, let's get back to what we have here because we're going a lot of information. We said, I'm even lost a little bit. We said, Mordechai said, Esther, don't reveal your nationality. It will create an intermarriage situation, a potential intermarriage. We said that that concept already existed in Egypt, something we spoke about 5 weeks ago. We don't want intermarriage in Egypt either. We said, okay, by the way, once we're going down that road in Egypt, I want to remind you of the story. I don't know how we got this, because Kaskal said something, and it came into the concept of last week's parasha of Yisroel, that when Yisroel came forward, that's when it told us about the divorce. Why? I didn't finish the idea yet. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu showed up, Aaron said, they're not going to be slaves, your wife and kids. Wife and kids are going home. But we're all going to be enslaved longer because there won't be a morality clause kept. So the Torah, listen to the beauty of Havna, someone else also, the Torah said, Aaron said, Moshe Rabbeinu, send her home now. Don't walk in to people asking. So now Moshe Rabbeinu walks into Egypt. Is he single? Is he married? Looks single to me. Nobody's thinking about it. Most, you have a non-Jewish wife living out there. That's not, like, why would you think that? He walked in. I'm here to save you. Everyone's like, okay, great. So they never knew about it. The Jews in Egypt, when Moshe Rabbeinu showed up, were unaware that Moshe Rabbeinu had a wife that he sent home. So because the Jews at the time were unaware, the Torah doesn't reveal it at that point in time. That was our question. Our question was, why did the Torah tell us this whole story of Moshe Rabbeinu five parshas later in Yisroel? Because the Jews didn't know until five parshas later in Yisroel. Because during the entire year Moshe Rabbeinu was performing the plagues, nobody thought he had a wife, and nobody therefore would have been intermarried because he was irrelevant. He came as a single guy. He left as a single guy, came back as a single guy. Big deal. Nobody thinks about it. Only later on, he's in Egypt. Now Yisroel showing up with his wife and kids and saying, by the way, Moshe Rabbeinu, have your wife and kids here. Now we'll do what? Moshe Rabbeinu, wife and kids. Now becomes revealed. They're out of Egypt already, so that's irrelevant. And yes, she converted. All the good things we can answer. But the point, what I'm saying is, why the Torah only revealed the concept of Moshe's wife and subsequent divorce, and now going to retake her back five parshas later, because that's when TMZ got involved. Five parshas earlier, nobody knew about it, so the Torah didn't talk about it. But that's when it happened. And why did it happen? Because Aaron said, we got to be clear on the morality clause. We got to keep this clause together. Without the morality clause, we can't get married. We can't get out.
So Esther's like Moshe. She comes into the palace. Nobody knows her religion. None of the Jews know religion.
Oh.
Mordechai knows it, but he's the only one.
Right now, we were saying, wait, yes, you are right, but not just what we just said. Parallel. Right now, what we said was that we were afraid that by raising her status, people wanted to. Now we're going to go to the second question, which Charles has asked. Were people aware of who Esther was or not? Ahasuerus was definitely not aware. It's fairly certain Haman was not aware.
But did the other
Jews, did the Jews know or not?
They recognized her features, maybe. I'm saying.
Did the Jews know or not? So I saw. You're going to like this. Because what did we say before when Michael was counting? We said there were four things what kept the Jews secure that they could leave Egypt. We're paralleling it. That's a word. Paralleling. Word. That we will do the same thing when they're getting out of the 70-year exile. First, when we just proved about intermarriage, what was one of the four we said before? Don't snitch. The Jews didn't snitch when they were in Egypt on each other. That's what we spoke about a few weeks ago, that Mesha Chachma, see RabbiHavna.com, whatever the other thing is called. Mesha Chachma week a couple weeks ago on the four cups of wine. Same thing here. When Esther went into the palace, Mordechai said, listen, Esther, don't say who you are, and let's see if the Jews can keep their mouth quiet. Not you keep your mouth quiet, but the Jews. Will the Jews try to take advantage? That's why. Will the Jews say, you know what? We got a queen there. Will the Jews say, you know what? Ahasuerus, we got something. Do we want to tell you something? But the Jews kept quiet. They also kept the secret if they knew. Question. We're going with the status now that they did know. They kept their mouths quiet. Therefore, just like in Egypt, the Jews got out for not snitching on each other. Paralleling it here, Mordechai is setting up a system where all of the Jews are following the four-step process to getting out of the exile again in Babylon, in Babylonia. Follow the four steps. You know what else Mordechai instituted? Mordechai instituted that every man shall speak his language in his house. Are we aware of that? Mordechai instituted at the end of chapter one. Rosen, do you remember that? The end of chapter one. Do we have a, I don't know, we have a chumash here. The end of, oh, that's bad sound. The end of chapter one. Was it in chapter one? I'm not even sure. He instituted a very, it wasn't in Mordechai, but he's like behind the scenes, but we can't go through all of that right now. But there was a very strange situation going on here. Hold on. Where it says, it might have been, by the way, Haman setting it up and Haman not even realizing that he's doing his own downfall. And it says here, the end of Parakal, last plus. And he sent letters to all the king's provinces, to each of the provinces in its own script, and to each people in its own language, to the effect that every man should rule in his own home, because Achashverosh is the ruler in his own home, every man, and speak the language of his own people. What is that doing anything over here? What is language of doing anything? Vashti was being a jerk, even though she might have been right, but Vashti was my redness, what's the word? A rebellious wife against her husband, the king. She got killed. New rule, all men rule the house. Women understand what's going on. Where's the language? And the language thing sets up that Mordechai catches Bigson and Sarah speaking a different language. Not for now. What it also sets up is that language becomes important. You know what that means? The Jews get to keep their language as well. The third way, when you start reading this unbelievable story, or you go to RabbiHuppa.com, there have been 12 classes on Megillas Esther I gave recently, that on the beauty of the intensity of the story, we see unbelievable here, that Mordechai is a political genius. Political genius. Why? Because Mordechai is setting the system. He's saying, I know what happened in Egypt. I know the ways to get out. I'm going to do the same thing now. So we cover intermarriage. Esther, keep quiet. It'll raise the status of the Jews, or the Jews themselves will begin to do it. Esther, keep quiet. And let's see if the Jews are going to snitch. Third one is separate. Third one is, when it comes to the languages, comes to language, everyone keep their own language. Now, I saw a wild idea. I saw an idea that Mordechai said that because her name was Esther, what does the word Esther mean in English? Esther means hidden. So it's hidden, right? The word Megillas Esther, we discussed this many times. Megala means, instead of being the scroll of Esther, it means to reveal the secret. Megillas Esther has two ways of interpreting it. The scroll of Esther, Esther the name, Megillah scroll, or Megaleh, reveal Esther the secret, which means the whole story of Esther is a fascinating secret being told. But it also means, it says that Mordechai said, that wait a second, her name is Esther? That means she's a great secret keeper, or should be a secret keeper, because why did they name her Esther? Everyone named by their born, when they're born, is named based on prophecy. So Mordechai said, you know what? It must be her name is Esther because she's supposed to keep a secret. Now she's in the palace. Let me make sure she keeps a secret. That's not me. That's 20 years ago. Why did Mordechai tell her to keep a secret? He had no idea. Mordechai had no, according to this other answer now, Mordechai had no political strategy on why she's keeping a secret. You know, yeah? A prophecy from God. Because God named her Esther. If God named her Esther, I'm going to go with the concept of her being Esther. I'm going to tell her, just keep your mouth quiet.
So what does Hadassah come in?
The Gemara discusses her real name is Hadassah and nickname Esther, her real name Esther, nickname Hadassah. Gemara will have to get to that.
They're both Hebrew words, though.
That's part of how you read those Gemaras. But Huffman wants to add, when Mordechai is reading the names and he's figuring out Esther's personality based on her God-given Ruvach HaKadosh name her parents named her, is coming on to the fourth behavior. That was what we used a couple weeks ago. The fourth behavior that saved the Jews from remaining in the exile. No intermarriage. No snitching. Keep the language and keep the names. So Mordechai was looking at the names and saying, you know, I value the name. Maybe I'm adding on. He was telling people, maybe, listen, Esther's in the palace. You got to keep quiet. You know how I know this? Her name's Esther. Because the Jewish name given to you at your bris is God-given, and keep those names. That's going to help us get out of here. So what we did tonight was we paralleled Mordechai, the four behaviors that merited the redemption, which we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, RabbiHavda.com, four cups of wine was not, what do you write the name? It's not four for four, but it's each one specific. You went for that class? I don't remember anymore. It wasn't four cups of wine to four names, because there's four merits and there's four words of redemption. Each one, it was 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3, 3, 3, 4, 4, 4. Everything specific. Now we're saying, take those four behaviors and find them in the secret story, because Megala Esther, to reveal the secret of the story of Esther, and you find the four behaviors here, and that's why there was a redemption, and the Jews built a second Beis HaMikdash. Thank you. Any questions? You had a different question. Yes.
So can we go back to the initial premise that Ahasuerus did not know the identity of Esther? How is that possible?
That's one of the big questions. It's a very certain. Now, the simple answer is Rosen still on. Does he remember that? Because Rosen liked it then. Going back 18 plus years, Stephen. I don't know if you heard the question. The question Michael asked is, how is it possible that nobody realized that Esther was a Jew? So the answer we gave, I think Rosen said it then, or he liked it, and I remember having the conversation with him, was that Mordechai ran an orphanage. He ran an orphanage. Esther had no mother and no father. That's in the story openly. That's openly in the story. So they knew that she had something to do with Mordechai. They weren't that naive. They picked her up from Mordechai's house. The soldiers came in and said, pretty girl, we take, right? Whatever they have over there, they knew where she was taken from. But that doesn't represent her nationality. And the Gemara said that Esther was, I'll use the word, chameleon, and that she had the look, the facial features, to be racist, of every single person looking at her felt that she came from that nationality. And you know what? The story was, I'm adding on, they found her in a bucket, in a bassinet, in front of the firehouse. Mordechai's house. I found her in a bassinet. Does she like me? Oh, I fed her. But you know what? It might have been a government contract. So it's not me. Is she Jewish? I don't convert people. That's not fair. You know, we separate church and state on the Achashverosh, maybe. But what she does have is affinity, maybe. But that doesn't mean she's Jewish. No. No. She could have been anything. What did she look like to you? The point is that, yes. So they knew where she, according to the easy answer. Stephen, do you remember this answer? You don't remember this. Is he there?
I don't remember it.
Do you like it now? You liked it then?
Yes.
Yeah, you liked it then a lot. So, Stephen, I'm not going to ask you if you remember every single detail we learned in Esther, but do you at least remember we did do Esther?
How could I forget?
What do you say? Yes, we spent many a time on Esther. The point is now that we, right, so that's a very serious question. By the way, your question is very serious. How did Achashverosh not know? He was going crazy, and you have to figure, the reporters are trying to figure it out. But the easy answer, which again, Stephen liked and likes now, is that he ran an orphanage, big deal. Makes sense. Okay, we know where she stayed. It means nothing about her past history. And she remained a mystery until the fateful moment when she revealed herself and saved the Jews. But the Jews were saved because they kept four merits intact.